Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Great to have you with us. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 at 15 Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it all up every step of the way. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Fun show coming up today. We will hear from Jerry Allen, the play-by-play voice of Oregon. We will hear from Tony Castitrone, the play-by-play voice of Washington. Both will be talking about the move eventually to the Big Ten and about their respective teams for the upcoming season. Later in the show, after that, in the final half hour, Tony Knopp, as we talk about what the future of college football looks like. And Mike Gross from Lancaster will talk about Penn State football as the countdown continues to Saturday's opener. 7:30 will be the kickoff, 6 o'clock the airtime, and you'll hear it on Eagle 107, our new home, Eagle 107 on Saturday when Penn State opens with West Virginia. Neil Coulon will join us tomorrow, and it's going to be a fun week. You know, Tony Caridi, everybody that we'll have on this week as we get ready. First, talk show with James, and the opening guest on Thursday night before James will be Athletic Director Pat Kraft. So that's all coming up on Thursday. So coming up, we will take time for a conversation with Jerry Allen, the legendary play-by-play voice of Oregon, on the move to the Big Ten as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. In his 37th season, he is the legendary play-by-play voice of Oregon football, Jerry Allen. Jerry, welcome. It's so great to hear you.
Oh, man, I appreciate that intro, but what it all that really means is that I'm old. That's why I've been here so long.
That's what I tell people. Like, this will be 32 for me, and then 42 for basketball. I say the same thing. I can't find somebody else, so it's good.
Yeah.
When I'll take you back almost 14 months, when you found out USC and UCLA were going to the Big Ten, what ran through your mind 14 months ago?
Shock. I mean, because there was nothing leaked out. There was nothing talked about as it might possibly happen. You know, like, wow, this could be they're not really going to do this, would they? No, it just flat got dropped on us, and it was a shock. It took a while to recover, realize what it meant to the Pac-12. It was going to become the Pac-10. And then we started thinking, are they the only two? I mean, how do you replace the L.A. market? That's a huge deal. So, yeah, it was unsettling.
From time to time, there had been some rumors initially about Oregon and Washington. That was initially. You know, what were you thinking then when you started hearing the carrot being dangled and then suddenly it seemed like it wasn't there any longer?
Well, initially it was, no, come on, let's hold the Pac-12 together. Right. There's too much history here. There's just, you know, it's been 100 years, almost 100 years, and so Oregon playing against the Huskies, the Ducks and the Beavers. I mean, so many great games against Stanford through the years. We're not going there. Thanks for the offer, but we're going to stay on the West Coast. We need to make sure there's a West Coast presence for a Power 5 conference. And so that was the thought. Now, I don't know what was going on behind the scenes with how serious those offers were, how big that carrot was. But I think a lot of us were like, no, we got to stay together.
Then when the TV contract came out and it was the Apple numbers, and Apple refused to have a linear partner to go with them, that's when everybody started to scatter. Now that you've, the dust is settling, and I know there's still another Pac-12 season to go, what did you think in the end about Oregon and Washington in combination going to the Big Ten?
Well, I think it was the right thing to do. I think you got to survive. I think you need to make sure that you take care of yourself. You hate to take off on the Pac-12, but Colorado had already gone. Arizona and Arizona State were making overtures, Utah possibly, and it just, you could just see the writing on the wall. And so the feeling was, if you get an offer that is even at least equal to what Apple was going to present, I would myself say go for it, because it's going to give you some linear TV. Now, 5 years from now, TV is not probably going to be nearly as important, but right now it is, particularly for recruiting. So it was, you know, mixture of just angst and sadness. You know, we're leaving the Pac-12. That means it's probably going to die. But how exciting to be moving to the Big Ten, where there are so many traditional programs that we used to look forward to playing because they were so well respected.
Give us an idea for many who have never been there, what a Saturday is like in Autzen Stadium.
Well, at one time, you know, and different coaches, depending on when they played, how well they played against Oregon, will call Autzen the loudest stadium they've ever played in. I think Lloyd Carr, some years ago when Michigan came out and the Ducks beat him, it was just deafening in here, and the Ducks beat Michigan, and he was quoted as saying, anywhere we have that quote up on the wall in the locker room somewhere, Autzen Stadium's where great teams go to die. which was awesome for Oregon at the time, because we really had not arrived yet. So it's only a 60,000 seat stadium. They can squeeze a few more in, but the configuration and the fans are crazy, like one would expect college football fans to be. And there's no real sports teams around, so this is a real focus. And it's pretty exciting around here. It is a fun, fun day.
I actually end up watching a lot of Pac-12 football based on my schedule. I'll come back from broadcasting a game, whether it's on the road or even here at home, and I'll end up watching a Pac-12 game. So I watched last year, and I know this will bring up painful memories, but the Oregon-Oregon State game last year. What becomes of that moving forward with the possibility of three non-conference games?
Well, they're, you know, that's mixed. You're going to get mixed answers from a lot of different people. I think there are a lot of fans that are you know, scrambling to try to push Oregon and Oregon State administrations to find a way to keep that series going, keep playing each other. There are some fans that, you know, don't care. I mean, you know, let's move on, all right? Oregon State's got to deal with their own problems, trying to find somewhere to go. I think it would be sad to end what we used to call the Civil War, and we can't call it that anymore. They still haven't come up with a name for it. But it's a tradition-rich game with two schools that are 38 miles apart. And the Beavers have got a great program. Holy cow, they beat Oregon last year, and Jonathan Smith's got them riding high. So to not be able to keep playing the Beavers somehow, at least every other year, would be really sad.
You're somebody that's very in tune with the fan base. What have they said about all this to you?
I think, surprisingly to me, most people understand why the Pac-12 is falling apart, why it's not going to be the Pac-12 anymore. And they know sort of who to blame. And that goes back probably to Larry Scott some years ago when he could never get the Pac-12 network fully engaged. He had two of the three partners they needed in TV deals. I think DirecTV is the one that never did jump on board. And so they were down a third of the money they needed. And that started the process. And then when television contracts started coming up for renewal and nobody was stepping up, and people start reading the headlines and hearing the news, only Apple TV, no linear TV. Fans are pretty smart. They got it. They understand. So I think most fans are disappointed with the loss of the Pac-12 and the tradition, but they understand why it happened.
This is has a chance to be a really good Oregon team. We saw Jack Ham and I had a good long look at Bo Nix here 2 years ago when Auburn came in. And Bo played well that night. He did not turn it over. He played well, but Penn State won the game. Jerry, he had a terrific season last year. Why do you think he had the season he had last year? And the second part of this, Will Stein comes in as the new offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach. Anything potentially different because of a new OC and quarterback coach?
Well, the first part of it, Bo, I think needed just a fresh start somewhere where he had fans behind him. I mean, he's a not an overly emotional kid, but he's very sensitive. He hears things, he knows what's being said, and he cares. And I think he felt like he didn't have the support of the fans, and the media is part of that too. You know, the guy struggles a little bit here and there, and the quarterback's going to get blamed. So he just wasn't comfortable, and he wanted to play football somewhere else and have a good fun last year without, I think, people kind of picking on him. And so he comes to Oregon, and he is an unbelievably nice young man. I mean, he's as good as it gets. I mean, I have two daughters, and if they were a lot younger, I'd be doing everything I could to get him to marry him. He's perfect. I mean, he really is. And he's got the team right. He got the team right away. I mean, they welcomed him with open arms, and he matured and just became a relaxed quarterback and quality athlete that he always was. But the last couple of years at Auburn, you know, just were kind of, he never could relax and do that. I think he cared too much. He's a different man out here now, and he's got the team. He got married the summer before that first season last year, so maturity had a lot to do with it. And I don't, you're not going to see anything different. I mean, I've heard some of the coaches say, "Hey, nothing's broke. We're not going to, well, you're not going to fix anything. You're going to keep doing what you do." They got a great receiving core, some great returning receivers. The running backs are unbelievable. Offensive line, they got to replace four starters, but they've got six other guys that played significant minutes behind those starters. So they're pretty solid on offense. I don't think you're going to see, I mean, even you're going to see some variations in the way they do some things, but it's still, you know, run the ball, throw the ball. Bo Nix is going to create. He only got sacked five times last year. Now, a lot of that was the offensive line, but a lot of it was Bo and his ability to read and escape. So I think they're going to do the same thing.
Yeah, I remember doing the Penn State-Auburn game and leading up. I just kind of felt like being a legacy. There was so much put on his shoulders down there that it would be almost impossible for anybody to beat. And I was glad he got out to Oregon and had the season he had, because I've heard the same thing about him, that you know personally that he's a terrific guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're lucky to have him. I'll just say that. I mean, sometimes those transfers don't work, but this is the best possible scenario.
Dan Lanning, you've had, you know, really in my mind, starting with Rich Brooks, who coached against Penn State in the Rose Bowl in '94, and had a really terrific team. And your quarterback only threw for 400 yards in the game. I was a witness.
It's not for Carter.
Kajana Carter, and your quarterback was Danny O'Neill, I think, right?
Yeah, one for Carter. Oregon had a chance to win that game, but he was a one-man wrecking crew.
Yeah, three touchdowns in that game, including on the first play Penn State had from its scrimmage. But when you look at Dan Lanning, who's the latest, coming in from Georgia, everyone understands what works, and they also have their own ways of doing things that may be subtle. What do you like about Dan Lanning?
You know, it's hard to put your finger on it. I got a chance to meet him when he was first introduced. We talked a little while. I was familiar with him when he was at Georgia. I'm 75 years old, and I'm getting to a point where I think, you know, how many more years I'm going to do this? It's still fun. I like doing it. But another coaching change, and we've been through some. So, you know what? After I talked to Dan Lanning, I was juiced. And I told him personally, I said, "Coach, I was entertaining some thoughts of maybe hanging it up. But I said, I believe in you so much, and you haven't even coached a damn game yet. I believe in you so much. I'll be here until you're gone. I believe you can win a national championship." And I do. He's young, brings in some new ideas. He's a terrific defensive mind. And he just, you're drawn to him. And there are a lot of coaches like him. I mean, he's not unbelievably special in that he's different than a lot of great coaches, but he has that it factor that makes you want to stay close to him because you just think he's going to be successful.
Come on, you got to stay in long enough where you and I meet each other a few times. Come on.
Oh, I promise I will. I'm not going anywhere.
But one thing that you did do, you did primarily basketball for a long time, and Dana does a great job with the program there. But that's one area where you slowed down a bit because family meant so much to you. And I think that's something that people are, there's so much travel that goes into this. You know, your family obviously is the center of your universe, and you showed that by what you did with the basketball part of it.
Yeah, no doubt. I miss doing basketball unbelievably. I mean, it hurts not to be there doing it. But I also, through my career, have missed so much of my children's, you know, birthdays and holidays and games and all of that. And then my wife's had a few back surgeries in her health. Yeah. I mean, she's certainly not critical, but she needs me more. And I, with basketball, you're gone 4, 5, 6 days in a row every 2 weeks, and it was like I'm worrying about her, and she's uncomfortable about me. And so I had to make a decision between two things that I love. Well, I love her a lot more than basketball, so yeah, it was pretty easy. It was easy, and you totally understand that.
Yeah. I do have to ask you about Game 4. How interested are you with the Deons? It's going to be only one time, really, Oregon plays them, because they'll go to the Big 12, you'll go to the Big 10. How interested are you to see what a Deion Sanders team looks like?
I'm really curious. I'm looking for their first game. I'll watch every game, because I don't know whether they're going to be really bad or surprisingly good. Usually, expansion teams in the NFL or baseball or whatever don't go well for them. And this is an expansion team. This is all new guys. So, but it's Deion, and there's some Hollywood in there. It's going to be fun. I can't wait to see what they do.
I love that. There's some Hollywood in there. That is so great. Oh, my goodness. Well, Jerry, I'm so glad you could give us some time today. I really appreciate it. And I am so looking forward to having Oregon and you in the Big Ten, because you have one of the sterling reputations out there, and it's a privilege to have you a part of the group.
Oh, that's very nice of you. I'm really excited to get out and see the new venues that we haven't been to, meet new people, you included, and just continue what has been an unbelievably fun career. And so thanks for having me. And, let's not wait till next year to do this. If you want to catch up to Oregon when they're still undefeated, late November, going for the college football playoff.
you know what? And that's a possibility, and I'll tell you right now, I will make that call.
Okay, but if we're 4-7, I won't answer the phone, okay?
As somebody who walks the same path you do, I wouldn't make the call. Jerry, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed it. And have a great, great season. I know you will.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. Bless you guys. And let's talk again soon. Bye-bye, guys.
We will shift from Oregon to Washington next half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, all with great warranties and also end-of-the-year deals. Fabulous pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors Guarantee makes the buying experience so much better. And a terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way. Takes care of the life of your vehicle. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. By the way, our high school football roundtable on Thursday is going to be fun. All three teams won on Friday night. That's a cool way to start the season. Penn State football will start the season with West Virginia on Eagle 107. Saturday night at 7:30, we're on beginning at 6. And then next year, Washington and Oregon will be part of the mix. We talked with Jerry Allen, the play-by-play voice of Oregon, in the previous half hour. Now let's turn our attention to Seattle. And Tony Castricone, who is the play-by-play voice of Washington football and basketball. Tony, great to have you with us.
Hey, thanks, Steve. I appreciate the invite. And I don't know. I mean, you've probably been on plenty of these flights before. Maybe you could tell me, how do we get to State College?
Actually, you'll fly right into State. If you're on, if you're with the team, you'll fly right into State College.
Okay, well, that's easy. You know, I think for the football teams, possibly for the basketball team, you know, that's great. I think it's going to be interesting to see how all these other highly competitive Olympic sports, you know, travel around in all these situations. But this is the brave new world of college athletics. And I mean, I think the Huskies are not only incredibly fortunate, but also incredibly excited to be aligning with a conference that just has, you know, as much tradition and success in every single way as the Big Ten has. And I mean, there's a lot of sadness and just confusion and disappointment that what's had to happen has happened. And yet at the same time, I mean, I think there's tremendous days ahead here for the Huskies. We're really excited.
Tony, what was it like over the past year watching this play out in public all the time? You know, whether it's UCLA in December and finally, you know, they reached some deal with Cal, or going to the Pac-12 tournament in Las Vegas and there's no deal, and you go to the big Pac-12 media day, there's no deal. What's it been like for you watching this play out?
I think I've put a lot of thought into that over the last couple of days since, you know, the dramatic events of Friday have become formalized. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people who are, like, really, again, kind of confused and maybe even a little upset that the Pac-12 has disintegrated, that it's essentially dead. And so there's kind of like a mourning and a grieving process going on for people who have been fans of a Husky team and a Husky program that's been aligned with that conference for 108 years. And the way that I'm kind of processing it is it is a death of sorts. But like, there was a terminal diagnosis that was leveled 13 months ago. And I think some people also kind of saw at that point when USC and UCLA decided to move on that, okay, there's no way in the short to medium term, this might seem somewhat normal, but there's no way in the long term this stays the way that it is, just the way that college sports continues to evolve. And so, you know, I think some people began to move on, and I think some people, you know, you go back and look 5 years back, you could kind of start to see some signs of unhealth. And so, you know, I think Washington's a really proud program, proud tradition, two national championships, and then has really been resurrected in the past decade with Chris Peterson being here and now Kalen DeBoer doing a fantastic job going 11-2 in his first year. And I just think there are some people around Washington and likely also around Oregon and USC that kind of got tired of the Pac-12 being a bit of a punchline in college football. You know, it's known for the after dark zaniness. It's known for whatever. But what it's not really known for recently is winning national championships. And I think there's a deep hunger and desire to be competing at the highest level, you know, from a lot of programs out here. And so I think there's this great hope and anticipation that aligning with the Big Ten will really level the playing field in a lot of ways. And we're not just going to be, you know, I mean, Steve, I'll tell you some stories. Like, you know, my first year out here, we had a really meaningful mid-November game on the road at Stanford. And anytime you play at Stanford, there's 5,000 to 10,000 people in the stands.
I mean, that's right.
It doesn't even matter if they're good. Like, that's just kind of what it is there. And we were on FS1 on a Friday night playing that game. And our fans, like, I'm looking at social media as the game's going on, our fans are losing their mind. And I'm like, why is everybody so upset? It's because there was a truck race on FS1 that was airing instead of Washington Stanford. And it's like, that's the kind of stuff that doesn't happen 3:30 on CBS. That doesn't happen on NBC whenever they're going to play the primetime games. And so that's why I just really feel like those are the kind of things that the Washingtons, the Oregons, the USCs, the teams that aspire to play college football at the highest level, they're really, really excited about now having that true, you know, I mean, being that billboard on the side of the highway in college football now, really going to have the attention and the eyeballs on them.
No question. Tony, in 83, when Washington played Penn State in the Aloha Bowl, I was the third announcer on the network at that time, so we were allowed to send one, and it was Gil Santos, the play-by-play guy, and the Washington-Penn State broadcast was split between the two play-by-play guys. Obviously, the 2017 Fiesta Bowl, I did that game. But also means that Penn State has never played a game at Husky Stadium. So tell everybody here what Husky Stadium is like on a game day, considering the fans here have never really experienced it before.
You know what, Steve? I think, and I got to check the record book, I think Penn State played the first ever game at Husky Stadium in 1920.
How about that?
And it might have been the second game. I can't remember. But it was like way, way back. And it is unlike anything. I mean, we call it the greatest setting in college football. If you get here in September or October before the cloud, the gray kind of settles in for a good 6 months, it's spectacular. You've got the sailgating off to the right. I'm watching practice right now, so I'm in the stadium and I'm looking off to my right, Lake Washington.
Yeah.
You'll have sunshine. You'll have hundreds of boats out there. Off to the left is campus. And then beyond that, with all of the, you know, enormous Pacific Northwest pines, you've got, off to the right, you've got the Cascade Mountains. Off to the left, you got the Olympics. They're always snow capped. And then back behind the stadium and from the press box, a spectacular view of Mount Rainier, which is the most prominent mountain in the lower 48 states. And so you really truly have something special, not just in the setting, but then these cantilever roofs that are put on both ends intended to keep the fans dry as much as it rains, but it also keeps the noise in.
Yeah.
And so it's just 70,000 people screaming off of a lot of aluminum. And it's really as loud as any other place in college football.
It is something I personally can't wait to see because I've seen it on TV so many times, especially the sailgating part, which I think is... Look, you'll love... When you come here, Tony, you're going to love the scene of the tailgating around here. I mean, it's going to be unbelievable. It won't be sailgating.
Yeah.
We have Spring Creek, and you can't even put a little boat on there. But... you're going to find that to be phenomenal when you come here. The mountains aren't as high, by the way, but we have mountains.
Yeah.
You're going to discover when you go other places there aren't any mountains.
I'll tell you, we have 100, and I grew up in Ohio, by the way,
yeah,
so I'm
yeah.
I'm familiar with Penn State,
yeah,
and the Midwest and everything.
Sure.
And as this whole news came out, I mean, I kind of just spent some time on YouTube watching videos of the whiteouts against Auburn that you guys had a couple years ago, and then
yeah,
and watching jump around in Camp Randall, and watching, you know, Iowa's traditions with the Children's Hospital. And I mean, it's this kind of stuff that, like, it generates goosebumps, really, truly, to know that, like, okay, that's what we're going to step into. So we're thrilled. We're excited. It is, I mean, just imagine if Penn State was leaving to join the Pac-12. Like,
yeah.
Imagine how weird that would be. Like, there's a lot of weirdness and and a little bit of upset that this even has to happen, and sadness and the loss of tradition, but also there's just a lot of excitement for the future.
Yeah, no question about that. So let's get to the other part of campus, because this is a multi-sport deal, and part of that also means that instead of just playing at Husky Stadium for football, that means it's Heck Edmondson Pavilion. I guess it's been renovated 10,000, and I understand the fans are right on top of the court. What's the atmosphere like in there?
Super intimate. It's, I think it's kind of got the charm of like a Cameron Indoor. The team has to be super competitive in order for it to be that ruckus.
Right.
But it's kind of a combination of the Cameron Indoor intimacy and kind of the Hinkle Fieldhouse with you're just kind of almost in a cathedral of college basketball.
Yeah.
It was erected in 1927. It still has natural daylight that comes in through these arched windows that are up there. Mm-hmm. And it's a really cool, and the way that UW is set up, so the football stadium's right on the lake. You can see that, but that's the entire athletic complex. So the softball stadium's on the water, the baseball stadium's on the water, and there's a tunnel that actually connects. The tunnel the football team runs down onto the field, that same tunnel actually connects to the basketball arena. So on those doubleheader days I have in November, I mean, I just like literally like I just walk from one to the next. It's pretty great.
Yeah, Jordan Center's across the street from Beaver Stadium, and that tunnel thing, that's the way Virginia Tech set up, right? Castle Coliseum right in the Lane Stadium. You just got to go through the back and tunnel through, you're in. So now you talk about the loss of tradition. Now, the Apple Cup, TV networks care deeply about a Washington-Penn State game because it's going to bring the casual fan to the table. The casual fan probably is not going to go to the table to watch Washington State, but from Spokane to Seattle to Tacoma to Bellingham, they do. What's the meaning of that game, and will Washington continue to go to Pullman and play that game?
You know, if you're looking for a Big Ten analogy, I always kind of felt like Washington, Oregon is kind of like Michigan, Ohio State.
Okay.
But then Washington, Washington State is kind of like Michigan, Michigan State.
Gotcha.
Like there's a real big brother, little brother kind of feel going on. And it's also kind of like in the state of Washington, there's a lot of Huskies that marry Cougs. There's a lot of, you know, people that are high school friends and then they go to the two separate colleges, right? And so these are just deep, deep ties. Where I think everybody in the state wants to see that game continue to be played. Honestly, Steve, I know there's an appetite on Washington's part to pursue it. I don't know how Washington State feels at this moment. I think any, you know, feeling would be valid given what's going on out here. But the question I have is, in a world where it's so important for a football team to play 7 home games for the athletic revenue, we're going to probably play 9 conference games in the Big Ten. Some years that would be 5 at home. Some years that would be 4.
Right.
Well, how do you do a home and home with anybody non-conference in that scenario and guarantee that you're going to get the 7 home games, right? Like, I mean, I just don't know. If you were to do the home and home on a year where, it was gonna, I don't know, it's just a lot to figure out. Hard to explain, but just a lot to figure out.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I really don't know which way it's gonna go. I've even heard some rumors that they might play 10 conference games in the Big Ten. So who knows where this thing's going, but I'll tell you this, the Apple Cup is a super meaningful rivalry, and I know that Husky fans want to try to continue it.
What is the atmosphere like usually leading up to a Washington-Oregon game?
Atmosphere is kind of hard. It's kind of hard to describe. I just know, like, as far as that feeling close to the program, it's like the two teams and the fan bases really the two teams really respect each other, but the fan bases kind of hate each other. And I really That's why I draw that Michigan-Ohio State comparison.
Yeah.
Because, like, they can't stand each other.
Yeah.
And I think it's different from Michigan-Michigan State and Washington-Washington State. Like, there's, like, a familial thing to that rivalry.
Sure, sure.
Where Washington and Oregon is just kind of hatred. And so, you know, there's a couple iconic plays in the program's history. You know, Washington was by far the better program from the beginning of time until, like, 1994.
Right.
And then Oregon all of a sudden kind of turned things around. But, you know, there's a play in 1994 where Kenny Wheaton intercepts a goal line pass, runs it back for a touchdown when the Huskies were on the door of winning the game. And they play that video 20 times whenever we're in Austin Stadium. And then, conversely, we like when Jake Browning pointed at the Oregon player as he waltzed into the end zone. So, like, there's just that level of animosity between the two. And that's what makes it really fun. And now it might be the final game of the season every year.
Yeah. In fact, that 94 team played Penn State in the Rose Bowl, as a matter of fact.
That's right.
Yeah, and Penn State completed its undefeated season. This Washington football team this year, and you mentioned you're at practice, Kalen DeBoer, formerly offensive coordinator at Indiana. Michael Penix was his quarterback, so Penn State fans have seen him play several times. This is a college football playoff contender this year. Why?
Well, so it's kind of unprecedented from what I've seen, but they had 8 draft eligible players that all could have been picked.
Right.
And all 8 decided to come back. And so the offense is going to be spectacular. They do lose 3 seniors on the offensive line, but they've got some depth at that position. So I think, as long as they stay healthy at those key positions, I mean, Penix has a history of injuries, and that's going to be huge. But as long as they stay healthy, they should be great on the offensive side. I think defensively, they're going to take a real big step forward. It was kind of an uncharacteristic year last year, decimated by injuries, had some losses in the transfer portal before the season. I think they've built that up. They got an all Big 12 cornerback from Oklahoma State who transferred in. A really good veteran linebacker from USC transferred in. And then they're getting healthy at some spots with some of their really talented players that weren't able to be at full go last year. So big expectations, but also way harder schedule than a year ago. So, you know, those things balance out. And last year the Huskies were 11-2, but, you know, literally just one possession away in their 2 losses on the road. So, you know, can they be that close? And then you're in those close games, then it comes down to, hey, a couple plays here and there. But it's a tough schedule. I mean, I also wouldn't be surprised to see them maybe take a step back in the win-loss column, but even be a better team.
Yeah.
And I think the focus for these Huskies is just, you know, they're all saying they want to win the national championship, but I know the team goal is they want to win the final Pac-12 season.
Obviously, in basketball, you'll end up going everywhere. But in football this particular year, you do have to play at Stanford. You have to play at Oregon State. You also have the game at USC, so but that's not going to enter into this question. You've got to play at Michigan State, too. And you have to play at Arizona. Do you think it might be surreal, especially when you go to Corvallis, because it's the last time?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Steve. And you picked up on it in a way that, like, I don't even know what it's going to feel like to go into that stadium for the final time, knowing that we're probably never coming back here. But that's the case for every conference road game except USC.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just the way it goes this season. So it's strange, but those are tough places. The Huskies historically have a hard time winning in the desert. Corvallis is tricky for everybody in the Pac-12. It is going to be an interesting season, to say the least.
Tony, you do one thing about SiriusXM, we get to hear everybody. You do a phenomenal job. I cannot wait to get into stadiums and share stadiums with you because I think this is going to be exciting as the years go by.
I'm flattered. Thank you for saying that. I look up to you, and good luck. Can't wait till we get to meet in person.
Have a great season, Tony. Look forward to it. This will be far from the last time we talk.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
Go Dawgs. Next half hour, Mike Gross from Lancaster on Penn State football here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.